Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Pari McGarra, Fredrickson and Byron for appellants Jason and Christine Dock, who are also present today. I'm here with my colleague Chelsea Jonason, who is also a Fredrickson and Byron. This case requires this court to determine whether the city is entitled to avoid the procedural requirements imposed by several statutes in making ordinances by simply declaring that the statutes do not apply. We respectfully submit the city is not permitted to do so under this state statutes. Because the city of Waconia disregarded the procedural steps required to create a binding regulation regarding docks, the city ordinance number 707 is invalid, and the district court's decision enforcing that ordinance should be reversed. I'll begin with a very brief recitation of the facts, although they're comprehensively laid out in our briefs. Appellants live on Lake Waconia, which is within the city. It's a statutory city. For several years before this lawsuit was initiated, the placement of docks, including appellants' docks and the docks of their immediate neighbors, has been contentious. We've outlined that history in our briefs. Of note here, the city has explicitly declined to regulate docks on Lake Waconia, both in February of 2015 and again in April of 2017. In late 2016, appellants decided to avoid the annual controversy regarding dock placement and contracted to have a year-round dock installed on their property. Several payments were made, parts were prefabricated, and construction began on June 19th of 2017.
Which was before the temporary ordinance.
Yes, it was. And the city was aware of the planned construction because the appellant's contractor approached both the city and the DNR regarding permits, as is his practice, and both informed him that there were no permits required and that the dock as planned was permitted. Approximately a month after construction began, despite the city's earlier notice, the city on an emergency basis adopted interim ordinance 705, which created a moratorium on permanent docks. There's no question that the emergency in the city's mind was the appellant's dock, although it's unclear why the emergency took a month to manifest from the time that the construction began. Shortly thereafter, the city initiated a legal action and sought a TRO to halt construction. TRO was denied in late September, based in part on the district court's assessment that the appellants were likely to succeed on the merits. Within just a few days, the city held another city council meeting at which it repealed the interim ordinance and passed Ordinance 707, a permanent ordinance that asserts its authority as Minnesota Statute Section 412.221.
Do you mind if I just jump in here?
Absolutely.
Because we have limited time, and
I just agree.
Had a couple of fundamental questions. I mean, because I understand you're saying, look, they should have had the public hearing and
I think
a public notice that the zoning ordinance, something passes a zoning ordinance would call for. And so when I'm looking at 462.357, you know, that seems to me when I just, it's an ordinance to regulate the earth's surface, the airspace above it. That seems different than kind of the water surface or kind of, or below the water. Could you explain? I mean, I understand a city could decide we want to follow this. You know, we think it's better, and maybe it is, to have a public hearing and public notice, but why does it say they have to?
Well, so there's sort of two separate questions here. One is whether they need to follow the procedures laid out in 86B.205 and 459.20,
right,
which are surface use ordinance. That's a slightly different question than whether the zoning process is required, I think.
But I see you saying both you have to follow the zoning and the 86B requirements.
Isn't
that, your argument?
Yes.
And so I'm first asking about, well, why the zoning? Then I will come back to the water ordinance.
With regard to zoning, the City of Minnetonka versus Wortman case, which is cited in the brief, says that dock regulation is an appropriate subject for zoning. And if the city is, if this is an appropriate subject for zoning, then the Glen Paul court case says you have to follow the procedures that are outlined in the zoning statute.
The Wortman case is unpublished, right?
Yes.
And it's hard to me reading it to know even if that was an issue that was raised, you know, in that decision.
I think that's likely fair. Yes. So more generally, I would say that Minnesota case law treats zoning as treating building development and uses of property, and so building a dock, at least the portion of the dock that is on their lakeshore property, is a topic of zoning, so sort of applying the what is the scope of what zoning should typically encompass. This is within that scope.
Well, I get that for the part of the dock that's over their property, but I take it what's contentious here is the part of the dock that's not on their property that's over the water, right? And that's why I'm trying to figure out how that fits into zoning.
I mean, that may be what the city is actually concerned about, but that's not what the ordinance says. So the ordinance doesn't differentiate in any way between the portion that's on their property and the portion that extends into the lake. And so I think you have to, I mean, I think that it would be, the ordinance is not meant by anyone, and no one argues that it should be read to prohibit the dock up until the shoreline, the high water line, or and everything else must be torn out. I don't think anyone's made that argument. It seems.
Do you think that looking at the statute, that the lake is the earth's surface? Like when we go right back to the words of the statute that I think Judge Jess started with, a municipality may by ordinance regulate on the earth's surface, in the airspace above the surface, and in subsurface areas. Does that include on the lake?
I think that it does, and even if it doesn't include the surface of the lake, surely it includes the lake bed. The city's lead argument here is that it's entitled to rely exclusively on Section 412.221, Subdivision 12. Which gives it, quote, the power to establish dock limits and by ordinance regulate the location, construction, and uses of docks. We would point out that Chapter 412 itself indicates that other statutes can and may apply, that Section 412.015 provides that this whole chapter does not modify the application of other statutory codes related to municipal governments. Here we have other statutes that plainly apply. We've talked about our position on the zoning regulation, or on the zoning statute, but Section 86B.205 and 459.20 together control the city's regulation of, quote, the construction, installation, and maintenance of permanent and temporary docks and moorings. It's hard to argue that an ordinance that I'm going to have to look at it, but I believe is titled Permanent Docks. Let me look at what the title of the thing is.
205?
Yeah,
Surface Use Ordinance?
Yeah, well, no, the title of Ordinance 707 is Regulating Docks and Public Waters.
Okay.
That is not an ordinance relating to the construction, installation, and maintenance of permanent and temporary docks and moorings.
Well, do we agree that Lake Waconia is not entirely within the city of Waconia?
Yes.
And we agree that the city of Waconia did not partner with the other municipalities to regulate the surface use?
Yes.
They couldn't have been acting under 86B205, right?
Well, they couldn't have been complying with 86B.205. The question is whether they needed to, I think. I think surely.
Has anyone cited 86B.201?
I do not.
Subdivision 2? I didn't see it in the briefing. Subdivision 2 says this chapter does not limit the authority of a political subdivision to adopt regulations that are not inconsistent with this chapter and the rules of the commissioner relating to the use of the waters. Does that have any bearing here?
Can you read it to me again?
Sure. This chapter, 86B,
yes,
does not limit the authority of a political subdivision to adopt regulations not inconsistent with this chapter and the rules of the commissioner relating to the use of waters.
Yes, I hear you. I think that the appellant's position is that it is inconsistent with this chapter because it doesn't comply with the procedural requirements of 86B.205.
Well, you might read subdivision 2 of 86B201 as suggesting that if you're not acting under 86B, then the city can act under 412.
I guess I would ask what purpose 86B has then. If a city may choose not to engage with the requirements and limits established by that statutory section, then presumably the city would choose not to because it is easier not.
But 86B relates to more than docks, right? It relates to surface uses as well, such as wake zones, speed limits, what have you.
Well, the statute here, 86B.205, which is titled Water Surface Use Ordinance, doesn't differentiate between wake ordinances and things of that nature and docks. And so I think that's a distinction that's not reflected in the statute.
So you think that in order to do any dock regulation, a city must act under 86B?
Yes, that is our position. The district court and the city rely on the word may in these statutes, which, for example, a city may regulate provided that it complies with certain procedures. That's wrong. There are two Minnesota Supreme Court cases that we've cited demonstrating this. The first is the T.A. Shifsky case, which deals with the rules of appellate procedure and stands for the proposition more or less that the appellate procedures, although they say you may appeal, are not optional. What is optional is appealing. Similarly, the Glen Paul Court case is a zoning case, but it's analogous to the 86B questions as well as the zoning questions. There, the city attempted to rezone without providing notice as required in the statute. The city said it would be too difficult to provide this kind of notice. It's an administrative burden, and the Minnesota Supreme Court says your burden is not a justification for noncompliance. If you think that the statutory due process provided to landowners, or in this case, the statutory due process provided to, I mean, I don't mean that in a constitutional sense, the process provided to cooperate with other municipalities on the lake are too burdensome, then the remedy is with the legislature. So if the statute applies too broadly, then that's a legislative problem.
Isn't there a way, if we agree with you, that the city needed to follow the requirements of 86B.205, that you could argue, well, they have, because the docks are really all within the city limits that they're trying to regulate under 707. And when it comes to the approval of the DNR, that subdivision says a proposed surface use zoning ordinance, and they're not relying on their zoning power. They're relying on their police powers. And could you just address that reading of the statute?
Sure. I think that, I mean, first, it's the facts are that they did not seek the approval of other municipalities, and they did not seek the approval of the DNR. And so your question is whether there's a proposed surface use zoning ordinance,
right,
under subdivision 4 of that statute. I mean, as we've discussed, we think that this is a zoning ordinance and should have been passed as a zoning ordinance.
If we concluded, and I'm not saying if we conclude that the zoning requirements, this is not zoning for the reasons we discussed earlier, so it's not a zoning ordinance, it's an ordinance under the city's police power, couldn't we read what happened here and say, well, they effectively complied with 86B.205?
Even if we make that conclusion that only applies to approval by the commissioner, which uses the phrase surface use zoning ordinance, if you look at subdivision 2B, it talks about approval of the other municipalities, and that only refers to a surface use ordinance. And so I think that we still have procedural problems, even if that's the conclusion that we reach under the plain language of the statute.
Can you talk, as I understand the argument, it's... I mean, this comes down to whether 412.221 is an independent source of authority to regulate the docks without respect to either zoning or the surface use ordinance. Is there, what can you tell us about how we determine whether there's any ambiguity? Is there any ambiguity? Do we have to look at, when do we look at the dates in which statutes were enacted and so on? Talk to me about that.
I think that... My recollection is that neither party has argued that these statutes are ambiguous. Certainly we have not. As to the sort of legislative history here, if you look at section 412.105, subdivision 2, which I'm going to... I'm running out of time. Would you like me to?
You may go ahead and finish your answer.
Subdivision 3 of this talks about limitations upon Chapter 412. The first section talks about its effect that it has on statutes that already exist. It does not alter, affect, or repeal, or otherwise modify them. And then the second talks about it, does not modify the application of other statutory codes. I think that relates both forward going and backward going, and leaves us in the position that we would normally be in the statutory interpretation question, which is that the later statute is to the extent they can't be reconciled, which would be your first sort of refuge. If they cannot be reconciled, then the later is presumed to govern over the earlier.
May I ask one follow-up question?
Yes, you may.
Are they irreconcilable, the statutes? Are they irreconcilable?
Not in our view, no. I think in our view, Section 412.221 is the what of the authority. What may you regulate? And the other statutes we cited are the how. And you can regulate them by applying them simultaneously. Thank you.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes on rebuttal.
Good morning. Jared Shepard of Hoff Berry on behalf of Respondent City of Waconia. May it please the court, counsel. The City of Waconia is here this morning requesting that this court affirm its standalone authority under Minnesota Statute 412.221, Subdivision 12, to regulate docks within its jurisdiction. Ordinance 707 was adopted pursuant to the specific powers given to city councils by the legislature. It's a very express authority without limitations. It says the council shall have the power to establish harbor and dock limits and by ordinance regulate the location, construction, and the use of piers, docks, wharves, etc.
Under both of the ordinances specifically disclaimed, or at least the permanent one, disclaimed any notion that it was enacted under Chapter 86B, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
May I follow up relative to this? So are you saying that the regulation, and because of Subdivision 12, of a harbor or a dock, is never a zoning ordinance? That's one question. Or if it is a zoning ordinance, there's no requirement to follow the zoning regulations.
Let me start with the second question and work backward. If the city were to enact a zoning ordinance, it would have to comply with the strictures of 462.357 and have a public hearing. There's no question about that. The question here is whether or not the city has to enact a dock regulation as a zoning ordinance. Now, there's two separate statutory schemes. There's Chapter 462. The legislative history is somewhat important in the sense that Chapter 462, the zoning power used to be in 412. It was taken out by the legislature and set up in its own statutory scheme. But the power under 412 is separate and distinct.
So is it entirely up to the municipality then, if they're deciding to regulate the placement of a harbor or a dock, to decide whether they're going to do it via zoning or do it via the independent source of authority that you see in Subdivision 12?
It is entirely up to the city council to make that determination.
So they can just say this is not zoning, even though it might look exactly like zoning where a harbor goes, for example.
Certainly, city councils make these distinctions all the time. They look at various issues and they say, do we want to regulate this under our zoning power? Do we want to regulate this, for example, perhaps under our nuisance code? The nuisance code, for example, is under one of the specific powers of the city council under Chapter 412. You look at a lot of city codes, you'll find regulations that are very similar between their nuisance code and their zoning code. For example, relating to off-street parking, the number of vehicles that can be on a particular lot, they can be regulated in multiple different ways.
And is there any room for judicial review of whether something is in fact addresses a zoning topic as opposed to a police power activity?
If there was a specific challenge to an ordinance adopted by the City Council that it was arbitrary and capricious, the court could then review whether or not under the particular enacting clause, whether that be the zoning or 412, the city had the authority to do that. Here it's quite clear, 412.221, subdivision 12, says it. The city can regulate docks.
No, I know, but my question was, is there any review of the decision of whether, you said they could either zone or not zone, mm-hmm. because they have this other authority for not zoning, okay? And the question of whether they're acting, whether something is zoning versus not. I mean, the reason why, when I look at what zoning is, it sort of regulates where things are, what mm-hmm. can be where, and what and but if you look at police power, I mean, if you look at some of the case law, it's about activity. We're not really talking about the activity of building the dock. We're talking about what's there. Doesn't that look a little bit more like zoning than regulating the activity of where someone can park or how loud they can be or, you know, things that we might think of as nuisances or other sorts of activities?
Well, the Ordinance 707 does relate to the building or construction of a dock. In terms of whether or not, again, whether or not a court can review a city's choice to enact something as a zoning ordinance or under any other statutory scheme, that can be subject to a challenge. It's a record review challenge to whether or not the adoption of that ordinance was arbitrary and capricious. That's not the claim here.
So if we concluded that the city needed to abide by the requirements of 86B.205, I mean, maybe just because it says cities can regulate docks, so does the other provision. This was later. Okay, so just assume for a moment that we conclude it does. Does that mean we have to send it back to the city because the city clearly said that's not the basis for our ordinance? Or can we engage in what I was trying to do with appellant's counsel and say, well, did they arguably comply with this?
I think this court can say that they arguably complied with this. I mean, there is a distinction between a surface use ordinance and a zoning ordinance. Again, we're talking about different chapters of the statutes. The surface use ordinance is in 86B205. Zoning is in 462.357. They are distinctly different things, and appellants are trying to use all these various disparate provisions to say, well, the city did something wrong, and therefore this ordinance is invalid.
You suggest that it can only be, I think by that answer and in your brief, it can only be one or the other, a surface use or a zoning ordinance. Why is that the case, especially when subdivision 4 of the water surface use ordinance specifically refers to zoning ordinances within its ambit?
Well, I think conceivably a city could enact a surface use ordinance and place that within its zoning code. They could say it is two things at once, potentially. But when we're talking about a surface use, we're talking about a lake-wide restriction on things like watercraft, speed limits, wake limits. These are far beyond
But why exclude Subdivision 3, which is the regulating the construction, installation, and maintenance of a permanent and temporary dock? I mean, that's right there as a surface use.
Well, I'm not excluding it. I understand that 86B205 says that if a county or multiple municipalities working together want to enact a surface use regulation, that it can include docks and wharves. But there's a standalone authority in 412.221 that says cities can do this without having to go down the road of a surface use ordinance. And the problem created by appellant's argument here is that the substantive right that is delegated to the city under 412.221 is repealed by implication, by the idea that the city has to go to 86B205 and seek approval from the DNR, seek approval from adjacent townships or municipalities, and that's especially important when we're talking about Ordinance 707, which applies across the city of Waconia. We're not just talking about Lake Waconia.
Are there other riparian lots in Waconia?
There are. There are five lakes, I believe, in Waconia. Some are shared with municipalities, some are not. So under appellant's view, potentially other townships or the DNR gets a veto power of a regulation that is local in nature. And it's important.
What about the argument that they're not irreconcilable? The power remains. It simply needs to follow the process and subject to the approvals required in regarding water surface use ordinance. Can it be reconciled by just in fact following
well,
that?
Well, I don't think.
Or the zoning.
Sorry. I don't think they can be reconciled in the manner in which appellates would have us use 86B205 and 45920. Because in 412, it is a standalone right. There are no caveats. There are no modifications to it. The legislature has actually been very clear whenever it wants to make any modification or a requirement for one of those specific powers of the council that it explicitly makes a statutory reference to another scheme. Subdivision 20 on taxis is a great example of that. It says that an ordinance must meet the requirements of 221091. So if it was ever the intention of the legislature to make sure that a standalone DOC regulation had to comply with the zoning rules for public hearings and get approval from the DNR or adjacent townships, it would have said this: exclusively under the provisions of 45920 and 86B205. But it hasn't done that. And I think...
But might there not be other things in that statute, you know, like building a parking facility or operating a ferry? I just can envision that there are other types of regulations that might apply to those activities. And although they're not referenced, I don't know, can you operate a ferry that's like polluting the, you know, that's just polluting the lake, for example, or build a parking ramp that doesn't comply with a building code and so on?
There's certainly potentially other regulations that might apply when a city is adopting an ordinance. I'm not sure in a hypothetical that I can answer what those might be. But we're talking about procedural requirements for enacting a statute. An ordinance, sorry. Mm-hmm. And that's a different thing. Appellants are asking the cities to do sort of a statutory seek and find to figure out whatever adjacent statute may be related and to follow procedures that aren't specifically laid out in 221. And I think it's important that Duncanson versus Dansville Township case, this court, it's an unsighted case, but it said it was analyzing whether or not the interim ordinance provision, 462.355, so that's in the zoning statute, required a public hearing. And the court said there is no legislative indication that the provisions of these two statutes overlap. And they're within the same chapter. The court went on to say that it must be unequivocal. It is certainly not unequivocal here. And if the city's substantive right delegated by the legislature is infringed upon by outside organizations, the DNR, the townships, you know, that right is essentially repealed.
We're running out of time here. I want to turn to a question that's briefed by the appellants and I'm not sure was addressed by the district court. That relates to whether the construction of a portion of the dock before the enactment of 705 gave the appellants a vested right that is subject to protection and that the ordinance ought not to be effective against them. And I don't know that was that issue asserted in the amended answer and counterclaim and argued on appeal was ever resolved by the district court.
It wasn't resolved by the district court, Your Honor, because it wasn't briefed or argued on summary judgment. It was appellant's responsibility to raise any issues of genuine issues of material fact, any affirmative defenses to the application of the ordinance at that time.
But it
was raised in the amended answer. I mean, they say the docs have a vested right under Roman numeral 9 and at some length identify the facts that they began to argue here today. And those facts are, at least to some extent, sustained by the factual record that we have.
Well, Your Honor, I understand that it was raised in the amended answer, but I think it's the obligation of the appellants to raise it on summary judgment because it is a defense to summary judgment in favor of the city and against appellants.
But didn't
you? I'm sorry.
Didn't they raise it in the TRO proceedings? I mean, that's where it seemed a little more than just, well, it was in the answer, and they never did anything with it. Wasn't it raised in the TRO proceedings?
It was raised in the TRO briefing, which Judge Broughton, obviously, in his order denying the TRO, made it clear that if the appellants were going to continue construction of their docks, they did so at their own financial peril, and he wouldn't hesitate to remove the dock. And that commenced at least another month or 2 months of construction of that dock.
I have a question about the who has which burdens in the context of a motion for summary judgment. They raised the vested right defense, or they made that as an assertion in their amended complaint as a reason why the ordinance ought not to apply to them. In making a motion for summary judgment, isn't it the obligation of the moving party to demonstrate the absence of a material fact on that question?
Well, under General Rule Practice 115.03, they have an obligation in looking at the city's outline of the statement of undisputed facts. They have to find out and outline to the court what other facts were undisputed and what the issues are. It's their burden to present those defenses to the court. No further questions?
Well, I do have an additional question with respect to this abusive process question. We didn't reach it with appellants. We may on their rebuttal, but I'm unable to find any authority for the notion that a cause of action for abusive process lies against the legislative body. Are you aware of any?
I'm not aware of any.
Any additional questions?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish to use that time.
Thank you. I do.
You want to start with that last question I had for respondents, counsel? That is there any Minnesota case that says a cause of action for abusive process will lie against a legislative body?
I am not aware of any, but I'm also not aware of any prohibiting such a cause of action.
Okay.
I want to start with the question of what the city does and doesn't have discretion to do. As Judge Smith pointed out, the city is not entitled, or the city, its position is that it can choose which statutes to apply and when. The sort of natural implication of that is that the city can, and or any city, can choose not to do zoning because it is. It's a process. You have to have public hearings. It's inconvenient. The citizens are angry sometimes. And you can avoid all of that rigmarole by simply invoking your police powers. I'll also point out that Section 412.221 does not always note where it cross-references to other procedural requirements. I look at Subdivision 28, which is regulation of buildings. Seems like that should surely cross-reference to the zoning procedures, and it does not. It says city council shall have power by ordinance to regulate the construction of buildings. There's no cross-reference to 462.357, although surely that would apply. Let's see. Regarding the question of whether an ordinance requires sign-off of other counties or municipalities as to internally located lakes. No, if the ordinance only applies to an internally located lake, the subdivision 2 of 86B.205, this is little subsection B, says if a body of water is located in more than one county, then this approval of other municipalities rule applies. The city could surely decide to have an ordinance that applies to a particular lake and not to others and avoid this sort of oversweeping problem that they've identified.
Let's pause there for a second. So if it's wholly within,
yes,
may by ordinance regulate so if it's wholly, what does 86B 205 tell us about whether it's wholly within the city what they need to do? Where does it just point me to the place? They don't need to follow.
Oh,
the,
I'm looking at subdivision 2B.
Okay.
So that talks about if a body of water is located in more than one county, and section 459.20 expands references to counties to include statutory cities and other municipalities.
Oh, so you're inferring from that if it's within one county, they need not do that?
Yes, that is mine.
Is that true with respect to then, like, subdivision 4 of 86BO205?
No, because that doesn't have the same sort of limitation. Also, it makes
sense. So even if it's within entirely within the city limits, they would still need to follow subdivision 4.
Yes, and that makes some sense because the DNR is a statewide agency that ought not be concerned with this sort of
differences. Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. So you're saying if it's subdivision 4 and it's that subdivision 4 does not apply if it's wholly within the city?
No, I'm saying subdivision 4 is the commissioner's review, so the DNR review. I'm saying that applies regardless.
Regardless.
Or always applies.
Okay.
Or always applies. Sorry. 2B applies only if the body of water is located in more than one county, sort of under its plain language.
Gotcha. Okay. Can you speak to the issue with respect to, the affirmative defense and the fact that it was not raised in summary judgment motions? Why should we consider that?
You should consider it because the normal principles, the reasons for enforcing waiver are that the district court and the parties didn't have a chance to develop this issue, either legally or factually, and that's just not the case here. This was the subject of discovery. And I'll point out even in the respondent's addendum, they asserted their legal defenses to this or their legal response to the affirmative defense to the district court prior to the district court's ruling. This is on page 2 of their addendum, where they inform the court there's no vested or lawful nonconforming use that can be asserted related to the dock, and then they cite to this Lake Minnetonka Conservation District case. And so it's not like either party was deprived of the opportunity.
Where was that citation?
This is in a letter sent by counsel for the city on February 19th.
After the summary judgment motions, or before?
After 4 days after the argument, right. But 2.5-ish months before the decision.
And why wasn't there an obligation to raise it as a defense in the summary judgment motions? I mean, if you're opposing summary judgment on an affirmative defense like a statute of limitations or something like that, doesn't that need to actually be in the opposition?
In an ideal world, that is how it would have happened.
The letter that's on page 2 of the respondent's addendum is actually in response to your letter, or letter from appellant's counsel, at least, also after the motion for summary judgment, right?
Yes, it is.
Any additional questions? All right. Thank you. We thank counsel for your briefing and argument. The matter is submitted. We'll issue our decision within 90 days. As counsel are getting situated here on the second matter, which is Stansbury versus State of Minnesota, I'll welcome you to the Court of Appeals. You can have a seat whenever you're ready. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument. Appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant wishes to use that time. As you approach the podium and begin your arguments, tell us your name so that we've got that for the record. And if you need to adjust the podium to meet your height requirements, feel free to do that. There's a little toggle switch beneath and below the podium. Is appellant ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may.